Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Main Yarn Podcast, brought to you by Knitwit Yarn Shop. We have a very special episode today. It sounds like we're from the 80s and we're in a sitcom.
Yeah, and my name's Jen, by the way.
What did I say? I didn't say your name. Oh my goodness. I don't know what our names are, but we have a very special episode. I'm Julie.
And I'm still Jen.
Excellent. And we're going to talk to you today about...
Well, we've got a very special interview from another one of our retreat teachers. This mm-hmm. is Simone Carrot.
Yeah, excellent. And then we'll do a little bit of what we're working on and some shop talk, right?
Yeah, and I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
Because we had lots of good conversation on the interview and we don't want to clog up your podcast box.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have Simone Carrot, who is known as Owlcat Designs. We will introduce her probably again in the interview segment.
We will.
And without further ado, enjoy. We will talk to you on the flip side.
Well, we are very happy today to speak to Simone Carrot, which I'm trying to pronounce in German just to show off, but we got it wrong. But welcome, Simone, from Owlcat Designs and other major designs. You're going to tell us a lot about all the designs that you do, hopefully, and also what we're planning for the retreat. So first of all, Simone, it is very nice to meet you. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi. Well, thank you, Julie and Jennifer, for having me on your lovely podcast. I'm looking forward to coming up to Maine in June. But in the meantime, at least I get to talk to you guys over the interwebs. So yeah, my name is Simone Carrot, and I'm originally from Switzerland, but I've been living in the US since 1999, I think it is. And I live in Eastern Pennsylvania with my husband and my two-year-old girl. And they're going to come to the retreat too. So you'll get to see them there.
Nice.
And I have been knitting since I'm about 5 or 6 years old. My mom always had a project that she was working on. So I kind of learned from her. But then in elementary school, we learned to knit as well. I don't know if they still do that to this day. But back, you know, when I grew up in Switzerland, that's what they were doing. My brother learned to knit too. I'm sure he knows knit and purl. And he knows what knit and purl is, but I'm not sure he can still do it. But it's something that I always liked. So I kept with it. And when I grew up, there weren't a whole lot of patterns for, especially for kids or teenagers. So when you learn to knit, you learn to make your own pattern in a way. Like you learn to make a sweater. So you'd go to the store, you'd buy the yarn, and on the yarn, it will tell you, you know, for a lady size 34 sweater or whatever, you need 10 balls of this yarn. So you'd buy an extra one, and then you'd go home and you'd swatch, and you'd have to because there wasn't the pattern, you had to swatch. So when people here tell me like, oh, I don't like to swatch, I'm like, it's like saying like, I don't like to put the key in my car. I don't like to put gas in my car. I'm like, you can't do one without the other. Like it right. just belongs together. And so that's how I kind of slid into designing that's how I had learned to knit. And when I moved here and people were like, oh, wow, that's really beautiful. I love that. Like, what pattern is it? And I was like, it's not a pattern. I made it up. Uh-huh. And so eventually I was teaching classes on how to do that for a little bit. And then I started writing patterns. Of course, there was a learning curve. I had to learn how to grade patterns and how to actually write them. It's not like, you know, you just go woohoo and there is your sweater pattern in 15 sizes. There's a lot of math involved and stuff. So yeah. I had to, you know, learn that. I had to learn about all the sizing and stuff like that. But so that's how I ended up starting to design knitting patterns. Basically. And
that's great.
The rest is great. Kind of history. And I just love the flexibility that you have with a string and two sticks. And you can make, you know, you can make sweaters. This is one of my sweaters. I know in the podcast, people won't be able to see it, but it's called Fluina. And it's just a simple, it's a yoke design, but it has one color per row. So you don't actually have to do two colors at a time. Like in most mm-hmm. yoke designs, it's just not a drop stitch. What do you call it? A dip stitch where you knit in the row below to get the pattern. Okay. It's still a little cold here, so I'm still wearing a sweater, even though I'm hours south of you guys.
Yeah, we're up in Maine. Although it was kind of nice today.
It was. We had our first barbecued burgers on the grill.
Nice. We had the grill open a couple weeks ago, and then we got 8 inches of snow two days later. You never know.
Yeah. Here it goes. Yeah, mm-hmm. Welcome to the U.S. Welcome to the Northeast. I know I'm going to have a lot of questions about languages and stuff, but I'm going to turn it over to Jen before I derail our podcast from knitting towards European languages.
So just curiosity, how did you come up with the name Owlcat Designs for your design company? What does that mean?
There's a couple of different reasons. I had a cat at the time. Well, we had a couple of cats at a time. We're down to one little old cat at this point, who's actually sitting here next to me now wanting some pets. You want to come say hi?
Oh, hey, baby.
Yeah. Poor little one. But yeah, I had a cat, a Maine Coon at the time. And when he did something that he knew wasn't supposed to do it, his ears would like droop sideways when I looked at him. Like, he had this guilty look, and he looked kind of like an owl. So that's one part of it. And then there's like almost a deeper part to it that for a time I didn't really tell people about. But after I moved to the United States, I came over because I had met a young gentleman in Europe who was from here. I came over, we ended up getting married. Yeah. And eventually we got divorced, and I was basically left high and dry here. And there's been some rough times in my life while I was here, and I didn't go back because at the time when I had left Switzerland, it was right after school and after college. So everybody had moved on. It's not like I could just go back and pick up with stuff, having been gone for 7 years. So I stayed. But the other part of the owl cat design is that the symbolism of cats landing on their feet. And owls as, you know, the wisdom and being smart about what you do with your life and with your decisions. So that kind of is part of the logo and the branding as well in the background. Awesome. But it took me a couple of years to actually tell people that that was the reason behind it. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, it's because of the cat.
Yeah.
You know? But it really was, it had more meaning for me than just a cute cat.
Yeah. That's great. Cool.
I'm actually hand winding yarn right now because I need to keep my hands occupied for a shawl that will have some kind of a meaning.
Oh, cool. I love that.
Mostly to do with my dear departed doggies.
Oh, I'm so sorry. They're such loyal friends. It's so hard to lose a pet. It really is.
Yeah. But isn't it? There's something about the tactile nature of knitting and designing and yarn that it helps to kind of absorb your feelings and help you work through your feelings literally. So
I get that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to bombard you with a few questions about language because I'm just like nerding out of it. First of all,
go for it.
You probably can't tell from my voice because I've lost my accent. It's terrible. But if I put it back on, I am super British. So I grew up
British, as opposed to just regular British, you know.
Yes, super British. Whereas most of the time, my natural speaking voice, when I hear it recorded, sounds to me like a 20-year-old Brit trying to do an American accent and not quite getting it right. So that's the voice I'm stuck with. But I'm from the UK originally.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Birmingham, England. I went to university in Scotland. But before I went to university in Scotland, I lived in Germany for a year. And I studied French and German, and also Spanish. It doesn't exist over there, but probably about the level of a minor. So I'm very nerdily curious, because I think you speak more than two languages.
I grew up in Switzerland in the predominantly German-speaking part. I grew up in Basel, which is right on the border with France and Germany. So Swiss German is what I grew up speaking. But then in school, Swiss German isn't a written language.
Yeah.
It's like different dialects. There's so many changes from like one town to the next that it's not written. So the grammar that you learn in school is High German. It's slightly different from Germany. We don't have that funky double B, the double S that looks like a B.
Yeah.
But basically it's High German. So that's the grammar and the language. So then I speak High German, I speak Swiss German, and then I learned French and English, obviously enough to communicate with everybody here at this point. I wasn't quite as good when I moved here. It took me a little bit to get up to speed. And I did learn Italian, but that's sort of like, I can still understand people to some extent, but I haven't used it. Mm-hmm. And so since I studied new languages and literature at the time, like I didn't read too much in Italian and just kind of lost it. You know, over here, Spanish is much more useful, which my husband's family speaks Spanish. He's originally from, his family's from Peru. And so Abuelita, grandma, speaks Spanish to our little one. And we have a couple books in Spanish and she understands some of it, but she speaks more Swiss German and mostly English. She just replies in English most of the time. But yeah, so je parle français, und ich spreche Deutsch. Schweizerdeutsch.
Schweizerdeutsch. Toll. I used to work with a company in Zurich, so I'm familiar with some level of Schweizerdeutsch.
And Zurich has a lot of more guttural sounds in it, I think, than Basel. They have a lot of ch's and stuff that ours are more like a sh, so it's a little softer. Yeah. And I feel like when you learn a different language, it's easier for somebody from Basel to probably get into that language because you don't have to unlearn that ch. Might be interfering with your regular English.
Yeah, it's a sound though that exists. It's in a few languages, but not all languages, right? The ch, like we don't have it in English, let's say, except when you have a bad cough. So, sorry, but you know, there's a similar one in Hebrew, and I love languages.
Yeah, linguistics are fascinating, like the origin of words and stuff. So we can you're coming to the retreat, right?
Yes.
So we can nerd out about that together. That's great.
Yeah, one of my favorite words to explain to people how German or other languages make you think a different way is the word Glühbirne, which actually isn't that great an example anymore because people don't picture light bulbs, the old style light bulbs.
Yeah.
But a Glühbirne, and I'm sure I've bored Jen with this already, but I'm going to do it again because I don't think I've done it on the podcast, but it's German for a light bulb, but literally it means glowing pear, like a fruit,
a glow pear, or glowing pear, like the fruit.
Yeah, which when you know, it's such a striking visual image all of a sudden, whereas in English it's like light bulb. It's not really exciting.
Well, I mean, a bulb is also a shape, right?
Yeah,
it's
a
fruit, flower bulb.
Yeah. But it's just like I like how with German you can kind of just compound words together and suddenly builds up a complex concept that you can translate into one short English word usually.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you can definitely like make these conglomerates of words.
What was the Zabrabal color that was like hat and pant or jacket matches your pants or something?
So the Zauberball, which is by, who is that by?
Schoppel.
Zauberball, they have all these cool color names. One of them was Jacke wie Hose, which I think we named one of the podcast episodes about because I had to look it up.
And I spent a lot on that topic. If I remember right what my sayings are, because I've been here so long that I confused them with other stuff at this point, but Jacke wie Hose would be like, it's one like the other. Like it doesn't matter. Like basically six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, that's kind of has that meaning.
That's where she came up with.
That's where we landed. But I wasn't familiar with the phrase Jacke wie Hose. I was like, it just means that your jacket matches your pants, but I don't know why. some very cool concepts in German as well. So
I don't know how that describes your color either though, right? I probably
thought it was a fun word to use.
Concept.
Better than the waffle colors.
Kabelsalat is a good one, I think.
Which one?
Kabelsalat.
Kabelsalat.
It means so cable salad, and it's basically that mess underneath your desk when you have like your laptop plugged in and your lamp, and like there's seven cables and they're all like tangled up like this. That's Kabelsalat.
That's great. When you write your patterns, do you write them in German and then translate them to English, or English and then?
I write them in English. I have a couple that I translated to German, but because I've learned the process of writing patterns in English, I've kind of adapted to doing it just in English mostly. And a lot of the German speaking people are familiar enough with English and with English patterns that they can read them. I mean, it might help. I know there's definitely a market for straight up German patterns. Yeah. And I, you know, if I had the time, I would translate them in all kinds of languages. But I do write them in English. I think in English, I dream in English these days. It's been a while that I've been here.
I got to that point in German at the end of the year where I was beginning to dream, and I was beginning to do the thing where people say, do you want to do this? And they go, yeah. And they're like, you're just showing off. I'm like, no, that's just
like, it's all mixed up here. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's interesting. And it depends what you learn something in too, right? Like when I first learned to ski, I learned to ski in German. In Switzerland. So at first skiing was a German activity.
Yeah, and like all the technical terms that you learn are then in that language, right?
Yes.
And so having to translate them back is like, wait, how do you say those things? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I'll probably hark back some other point, but yes, very cool to talk about the language stuff too.
So I'm gonna bring it back to knitting for a second.
Okay. So
you're teaching two classes for us at the retreat. So one of them is a project class, and we're working with a dyer to come up with some project colorways, which we will have available for pre-order. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the shawl and what you're going to teach us in that class?
Yeah, so the shawl class that I'm going to be teaching is, it's basically for people who haven't knit many or haven't knit any shawls because they're just a little bit unsure about how to start, perhaps. So it teaches you everything that you need for this particular shawl, but it'll also teach you a lot of skills that you need to go and knit a whole bunch of other shawls. The shawl itself starts with what's called a garter tab, which is basically the center of a lot of the crescent-shaped shawls.
Yeah.
It's a little strip to start the shawl from which you end up picking up stitches along the long side. So you don't have to cast on all the stitches. It gives you the same edge as the rest of your shawl has. So we start with that on this particular shawl, and it's a three-color design, and it starts with simple garter stitch rows and some eyelets in there. So it gets a little bit more spicy as you go along if you want. So at first it's just one color, then you do a little stripe, then you do a stripe with eyelets, and there's some increases in between that get mixed in. And then you get to a couple of sections of easy lace. And one of the things we're also learning in the class is the pattern is written both for, you know, just written out or for charts. So we're going to also look at how to read lace charts or how to read charts for knitting, which I think everybody should learn. It's so much easier to work from a chart because it lets you visualize your knitting and see the mistakes easier than if you like have to try to compute this string of text in your head and translate it into a knitting pattern. And then you look at it and you're trying to see, why do I have a stitch extra or not enough and what happened? But if you have a chart, you can see, okay, so these are supposed to line up, but they're not on my shawl. So somewhere is that mistake, like the mistake is somewhere right in there, and it lets you pinpoint it easier. So that's one of the things that we're going to be learning as well, along with, you know, going through the project. And in the class, we're actually going to make a little cute mini shawl. Okay. I'm going to pull those out for you guys so you can see it. But I'll bring some of them to the workshop. At the retreat, of course, we're making a little mini shawl so people get to try out all the different techniques, because obviously in a 2 or 3 hour class, you cannot knit an entire shawl. As much as we would like to do that, that's just not humanly possible. And so making that little shawl where everybody gets to do the beginning, gets to do some of the lace, gets to do the bind off, gives everybody the skills and everybody the techniques that they need to then jump in and knit the entire shawl throughout, you know, the weekend, hopefully, or over the next couple of weeks, you know, however fast or slow you're knitting. Mm-hmm. So, but it gives you all the different steps that you need to do this shawl and also the skills to knit a bunch of other shawls afterwards that are designed the same way. And a lot of them are. So.
Yeah, I think those are good skills to have. Like, I remember the first time I tried to do one of those garter tabs, I was like, wait, what are they even telling me to do here? Like, it's a weird concept, but it does make sense after you've done it several times.
Once you've done it a couple of times, it's not so, wait, what?
Yeah. And if I had someone showing me, I feel like it would have been a lot, like it would have helped my confidence, right? Like I was doing what it said, but I'm like, really? Is this really what you want me to do? Like, why would I want to
do totally, that? I totally get that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it feels like that can't be like, really? Yeah. What? But if somebody is like, okay, this is what you're doing, and then this is the next step, you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's what I'm doing. It works.
Kind of like turning a heel on a sock, right? You're like, why would I want to do
that?
But yeah.
Don't.
Heel on a sock. I love that.
Yeah. My advice to people who are just doing it for the first time is like, just do what it says. Like, don't question it.
Right.
Because if you start to try to figure out why it's doing, how it's going to work, I think 99% of people are not going to be able to figure it out just from reading the pattern the first time you do it.
Yeah, and once you did the thing with your hands and then read it, then you're like, oh yeah, now I get it. I see why it's doing this. But I mean, it's a good idea, I think, to read the whole pattern through before you start, just so you know where it says, like, at the same time, like three paragraphs down, right? Like, that's always like a trip up. You're like, oh man, I just knit half a sweater and I didn't do what it was supposed to.
At the same time, change to your larger needle.
Yeah. But trying to figure it all out as you're reading through it can be like too much. And then you have to just go back and do one section at a time.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of just following the directions, your other class is on steeking, right? Which a lot of people are afraid of.
Yeah. In fact, there's an eek in steek.
Yes. Eek.
And so we are before this call just talking about a sweater that, and we'll probably talk about it elsewhere on this podcast, but this cardigan I've been working on forever, I finally got done with the steek. And even I was doing it, I'm like, I'm not sure exactly why this is going to work, but I'm trusting the process. So.
Yeah, so my second class is on steeking, and we're going to learn it just on a little swatch. So there's no fear involved in having to, you know, bring this beautiful color work piece that you've spent hours and hours on making. We're going to just use a simple swatch flat, not even in the round, and we're going to learn the technique of how to do a crochet in reinforcement for your steek, where to cut it, how to secure the ends, which you don't necessarily have to do, but how to fold it over, pick up a button band, or put a zipper in even. We're going to look at those different things. So people need to, if they have a zipper lying around at home, bring a zipper with you so that we can, and you can repurpose it. Like, we're just going to try stitching it in. So we figure out how to lie it right on our project. You can take it back out afterwards and use it for something else. It's not like you have to get the perfect length, like zipper. Just bring a zipper if you have one at home. If not, you can watch me do it, I guess. But I think it's easier if you can actually try it out yourself, if you want to put a zipper in things, which I think is a nice thing to do sometimes if you have like a heavier steeked garment, like a coat. I made like a long jacket out of the heavy lopi, the Alafos lopi. Yeah. And I put a zipper in that, and that thing keeps you warm. It's like wearing a bear. You know, probably the Maine winter would be a better place for it than Pennsylvania lately. Like, it's not, there's some days where it's cold enough, and most of the time I'm like, I need to move back to Switzerland. It's just, there's not enough snow here. Like, we're basically going through all the steps in the class so that people get the confidence to go out, go forth and steek in the world. Steeking is really, I know it seems very scary because you're cutting into your knitting, but if you think about how your stitches run, they usually run downwards and not sideways. So it's, you know, there's one safety thing right there in the fabric of your knitting that's already built in. Like, it doesn't want to ravel sideways. Yes, can you undo it from the side if you try hard enough? But if you drop a stitch, it's going to go down. That's the direction that the stitches want to go. They don't usually want to go sideways. So that should make you feel a little bit better about the whole concept of cutting through your knitting.
Why do designers design things with steeks in the first place?
A lot of times for color work, it's just so much easier if you can just do knit stitches in the round. So you don't have to go and do two colors in a row while you purl. And then you'd have to like carry the color on the inside of your garment, and like, you can't see what you're doing, and you want to make sure you don't loop it, you know, on the other side. And your tension might be completely different because you've never done wrong side rows with two colors. Yeah. So it's just much easier to knit all knit stitches and switch the color on the back as you're going along than having to go back and doing it on the purl side. So yeah. That said, I do have one garment that I did that has a circular yoke, which has, I think, 20 rows of color work, where I chose to do wrong side rows. You could steek that too if you wanted to.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something a lot of people are afraid of. So looking forward to that class.
Yeah, awesome. And I've taught it online before. I teach classes through Vogue. I'll be teaching in May. I'm teaching a couple of classes. I don't think I'm teaching the steeking class. I teach a couple of different classes, but I'm trying to tell people, like, if I can teach you through the computer, I can definitely teach you in person. So you need to take that class, and you'll be able to walk away saying, I can steek a sweater. It's going to be okay.
That's amazing.
It goes well with one of the other classes that Sydney will be teaching on Fair Isle. A lot of Fair Isle sweaters are steeked if you want them to become cardigans. So I think that's a great combo if people are interested in those two classes.
Yeah. And a lot of the traditional Fair Isle garments, even if they're not a cardigan, they would steek the armholes. So they would knit a tube and then literally cast on stitches for where the armholes or the neck, like the V-neck would be. Oh. And like basically make a tube that becomes like a cylinder that goes in towards the top. Mm-hmm. And then you cut that open to add the sleeve into.
Did not know that. Cool.
Yeah, a lot of the, like, if you just look into like the older styles, or even like, you know, you can buy kits from today, but a lot of the more modern ones maybe are designed differently. But that way you can keep going with the color work, even though you do a decrease for an armhole when you're just adding those extra stitches, and then you just snip it open. The old V-neck sweaters too, you can do the same thing there. It's going to get a little bit of a strange shape as you're going along. You kind of have to trust the process as you're knitting that.
Right.
But yeah, they were steeking all these different things. And if you're using, one of the things I want to say, like, don't use superwash yarn or silk or rayon or bamboo, because that's super slippery. You right. definitely want a yarn that's preferably non-superwash, or you're going to have to be really careful that it doesn't slip out. But if you're using one of those Fair Isle Shetland yarns, they're so grabby. I mean, I've known people at the local yarn store. There's a guy that knits these amazing Fair Isle sweaters. He doesn't even reinforce the steek. He just cuts the thing.
Oh gosh.
And I'm like, but he's like, no, it's fine, because, you know, after like you wear it a couple times, it fills in and then it's all good. And I'm like, all right, well, you tell me. And his sweaters seem to work, but you know, I'm not quite as confident as that. I like to reinforce my steek and then
you know. Yeah, we just started carrying Lopi because we moved to a bigger shop.
Got it. That's so exciting.
Yeah. And so Lopi is one of the first new yarns I brought in.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of Let Lopi. My Alifas is still all back ordered because of all these supply chain issues we have, but hoping to get it soon. And then I can make my bear coat.
Yeah, I have one of the patterns I have is written so you can make it in both. Depending on what you're looking for. Are you looking to wear a bear, basically, or are you looking to wear a cloud?
Sweet.
But yeah, if you, it's knit at a loose gauge in the Let Lopi or at the proper gauge in the Alifos. But depending on your climate, you may not want a bear coat. You may want the other one. And I made it in both, A, for the pattern, and B, because, you know, depending on the time of year, right?
Right.
So
Florida, maybe it's a lighter. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Florida is a little bit too far, unless you turn your air conditioning way up.
Yeah, which they do.
Yeah, they do.
And I know they also wear fur coats when it's 50 degrees. So maybe people will need a Lopi sweater in Florida, you know? You get used to it. My brother was working, he was a dive instructor in Thailand until the pandemic took his business away. So he had a dive shop on an island. And when he, you know, he's from Switzerland, but when he came back, he came to visit us here. And it was in November. It wasn't like that cold. It was pretty cold, but it wasn't that cold. And he was like freezing, like wearing all his clothes on top because he had lived there for several years. He's gotten used to the hot climate, so now he has to adjust back to Switzerland.
You're like, what happened?
And I was like, I can't.
So I know you grew up with the improvised knitting aesthetic, which you find a lot in, especially kind of more southern Europe, I would say. I don't know if that's really a judgment call. I mean, we interviewed another British knitter, and she really kind of makes up her stuff off the top of her head, as you know, as well. That's her standard approach. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested, how often do you knit other designers' patterns, and whose do you like? Do you want to tell?
Oh, that's a tough question. When I was like right now with having a 2-year-old, I don't get to knit nearly as much as I would like, or design as much as I would like, because by the time she's in bed, and my head just doesn't do a whole lot of math anymore. So I have slowed down the designing, sadly, a little bit. I've done more teaching, which I can, you know, I can do. I don't have to do a whole lot of math. The math is the problem, I think. They're not sleeping with math. It's just not kind of working so much. And there was one year where I had 2 book collections published. That was just so intense that I didn't knit anyone else's design. So for a time, it was almost like, it felt like vacation when I was knitting somebody else's design. So I have a couple of cardigans that I did in the last couple of years that I really like, that are by Andy Satterland.
Okay.
I think, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right. I'm hoping I do. Her patterns are like cropped cardigans. They're kind of like, I don't know what you're going to call that style. I think Sydney would like it. It's like, it's sort of like retro. It goes well with a dress, that kind of stuff. So I have a couple, I made like 1 or 2 of her patterns. I bought a couple more because, you know, I was like, I had all these plans. I only have 2 hands, not that much time. I do like her patterns a lot. They're a really nifty construction where you work from the top down with set-in sleeves that are like short rowed into it. And I like that technique. I've used it for some of my own patterns too. So I was like, yeah, that's a no-brainer. I love that. What else have I knit? Have I knit any... trying to think if I've knit any shawls. I mean, I've knit smaller things that were designed by other people. I think, you know, I've knit a couple of my designer friends' hats or, you know, things like that, just like to do something different where I didn't have to think about it. I could just follow the pattern, just tell me what to do, you know? And I've been also doing, I'm trying to be more mindful about what I wear in my wardrobe. So I've been trying to create a more sustainable and a handmade wardrobe. Mm-hmm. And I was starting that process, you know, several years back. And then, of course, I had the kid and now I haven't had much time to do too much sewing. But I still have, you know, my sewing machine is out and I've been doing a little quilting in between. And I have a couple of shirts that I want to finish. And I have plans for some summer dresses as well. But I don't think I've knit a whole lot of shawls that other people have designed, honestly, because I've designed so many shawls myself that I can only use that many. Yeah. And, you know, at some point you run out of space on your neck.
I think you're really going to like the place where we're having the retreat, which is Sears Port Shores. But I'm just thinking, yeah, Simone's really going to like it, isn't she?
I think I'm going to like just sneak out of the car and let my husband and my daughter go back home.
It's a real kind of retreat for artists. So there's one particular building that we keep talking about, but yeah. I think you'll really feel at home there. And it's obviously a place where people go to make stuff, whether that's sewing or quilting or knitting or woodwork or anything.
Oh, wow. I love making things with my hands. I always have. I've done a variety of different things, not like as intensely as knitting, but like, I'm just curious about how things are made. Like for a time I had a friend who made beer. So I was like, I'm going to make beer because I need to figure out how this works. Right. Yeah. I mean, like I've made bread pretty much. Well, maybe not quite since I moved here, but at some point I realized that I'm not going to be able to get the bread that I'm used to from Switzerland. And so I ended up having to make bread. So I usually bake, you know, once a week or so, because I just kind of, that's what we eat for breakfast. You know, you eat bread with lunch meat, I guess, with, you know, salami and cheese and stuff. So
which kind of bread are you making?
I'm going to have to find the picture. There's like regional breads in Switzerland that you don't find anywhere else. Yeah, so I like a couple of different ones. They're more, you know, like maybe sourdough breads, but there's a rye bread from the southwestern part of Switzerland, from the Valais, that is, it's just you can't describe it. It's just so good.
And Roggenbrot breads too. A really, really dark Roggenbrot of some sort.
Yeah, it's a Roggenbrot, that was a Walliser Roggenbrot. It's slightly different than like the German. Yeah. It's not sour like some of the German ones that I've seen. Mm-hmm. It is made with a sourdough, but I think it's a sweeter version of a sourdough. Yeah. And then there's a variety of different, there's a Anzopf, which is like what you would eat on a Sunday. It's an enriched bread. And then just like your regular like farmer's loaf, but they're all like, you know, they have that crust that I just need that crust.
Yeah, they're really hearty. And then British and American breads generally, like, you know, if you put your can of peas on top of the loaf of bread, the bread's ruined. You know, you've
got the bread has the shape of the can of peas afterwards.
That doesn't happen in Germany and Austria and Switzerland. My husband's an American, but I met him in Germany. But his joke was that, you know, you can use German bread to play football.
You know, I'm sure you could. I had a friend who was traveling in Switzerland, and he said like the first time he had bread in Switzerland, he thought they had given him like old bread because it was hard on the outside.
So the teeny tiny town that I lived in, every morning, almost every morning, I would go down to the bäckerei and get Brötchen. So you go down to the local bakery and you get fresh baked bread that was baked that morning. And you can find that in a lot of places, but not so much here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here people shop once a week, right? Like in Europe too, or in Switzerland anyway, it used to be like, you don't do grocery shopping for the whole week. You go every 2 days or so, you know, like your refrigerator is like maybe a quarter of the size of refrigerators here. So you don't have the space to store, you know, 4 gallons of milk or whatever it is. You get them in liters, which is a quarter of a gallon. And so it's just a different, it's a different approach.
Yeah. Oh, now I want some nice European bread, some nice German or Swiss.
Yeah, now I'm hungry too. Great. We just had dinner.
Now, of course, speaking of stocking up, we all, of course, have got enough yarn for an apocalypse, though, in our houses, right? So I think that's true regardless of where you're from. After a while, you end up with a stash beyond life expectancy.
Yes.
I feel like it's almost
two different. Some people have a whole yarn shop at their house. Mine's, you know, I have a stash. It's not that bad, but I definitely have, I need to like work on that. Or maybe de-stash some of it, because some of it is too like samples that I've gotten from, you know, yarn companies, and maybe they don't even make that color anymore. And now I'm like, what do I do with one ball of this yarn or one ball of that yarn?
Yeah.
You know, if I were like cranking out hat patterns every other week, like I could probably use all of them, but I have not been able to to do that quite as much. So, but yeah, there's definitely some yarn in my house. And I think it helps insulate. It's good.
Yes. It's got all kinds of positive properties.
Yeah.
I think we've hit on all the hot topics here. Used up lots of your time. So thank you so much for meeting with us.
Well, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun to talk to you guys.
Okay. Cheers, Simone.
Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
What a great interview. I cannot wait for this retreat. It's so much fun. Gonna nerd out together. But now it's time for a word from our sponsor. Speaking of the retreat, Knitwit Yarn Shop is now open in our new, larger location in downtown Portland, Maine. We are located at 34 Danforth Street, still just steps away from the waterfront. Knitwit has been a favorite knitting destination for locals and visitors since 2004. If you aren't local or just feel like shopping in your pajamas, you can browse our full inventory at knitwitportland.com. And also follow us on Instagram at Knitwit Yarn Shop or on Facebook at Maine Knitwit. But make sure you stop by to say hello on your next Maine vacation.
There's lots of good stuff on the Instagram and Facebook too that I can't fit into the newsletter twice a week.
Yeah, but you can certainly fit it into that brand new store. So that's great.
Yes, that's why there's so much to share.
Yes.
All right. So what we're working on.
Yeah. Why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I've got a bunch. So we had talked just a few minutes ago with Simone about my Spark Cardi and the steeking I had done.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued on shortly after that a little bit.
No.
And
skip ahead. Yeah.
I was not happy. I'm just worried about my steek. I feel like I did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been in timeout for the couple of weeks since we recorded that interview.
Yeah.
And what I think I need to do is get some ribbon or something and sew the back of the steek and the ribbon like onto it to make it look like I meant to do that. And then I will feel like it's more secure.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking about how Simone was talking about, like, she had that friend who didn't
doesn't reinforce
it
right
it was wool, and but I'm so nervous, like these little ends poking out.
Because what yarn are you using again?
I mean, it's all 100% wool.
Yeah. But is
Patagonia?
It like a fisherman wool or is it a smooth?
The Patagonia is pretty fisherman wooly.
Yeah.
And then I've also got the Entropy DK, which both are pretty grippy,
grabby.
There are two different weights though.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of a cool thing, but it's also a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I may end up just bringing it to the retreat and having her look at it there if I don't get to it. But I would
ask
to
the expert. Yeah.
But I'll definitely be in that class.
Yeah.
So cool. That is, it's so close to being done. All I got to do is pick up the collar and knit it.
Yeah.
So I'm just getting nervous. And now it's warm out, so I don't need it. Although I'm sure there'll be cool nights again some point soon.
Yeah.
All right, so what have you been working on? Hopefully something better than my catastrophe there.
Yeah, not really a catastrophe, but the Pure Side cardigan, which I was just revisiting our podcast from last month, and I said I had been on a mission to try to finish it for March, and here I am. Yeah, but I'm more than halfway up the first sleeve, so the end is in sight. You know, I'm getting there, so working on the Pure Side.
Cool. We'll both have our nice warm sweaters done for July.
Yes, perfect.
And thinking back to last month's interview that we had with...
Yes, I'm going to say the wrong name.
Sorry, I've got some...
Sydney Krava.
Sydney Krava, thank you.
Both begin with an S. Yeah. Sydney and Simone. Yep.
Yes. So her latest pattern she just put out on her Patreon.
Yeah.
It's called The Marvelous Beret. And it was just
nice.
So cute. It's this color work beret. It's just adorable. So mm-hmm. I went and I got some magpie.
So you had to start another project.
I did. It's going to be the theme. Yeah. I've started so many projects and finished none. but it was, not that I wear berets, right? Like, why do I need a beret in my life?
Well, yet.
Okay.
Now you will.
I guess. But I had to go because I loved it. And I grabbed some magpie swanky sock for my mm-hmm. main color. Mm-hmm. And then for my contrast color, I picked up a Sweet Georgia Tough Love Sock Party of Five.
Yeah.
Which comes with 5 minis. You only need 3 of them.
Yeah.
So I got 2 extra that I might put into my sea glass tea.
Yes.
Which is all the fingering weights.
Yeah.
But since then, we've gotten like a ton of Dirty Water Dye Works minis in the shop.
Yes, I saw those.
Which you got to play with last week.
I did.
This week, I don't know when.
Yeah, recently. A few days ago.
Yes. And yeah, those would be great for this too. You could pick 3 that you wanted to. And I think it's just the love of color that makes me want to knit this thing. So I've cast it on. I found the needles and we're going.
Perfect.
Yeah.
What have I got? I just took my reading glasses off, so I don't even remember.
Deconstructed socks.
Yeah, deconstructed socks, which I think I'm going to put the pattern out at some point here. But although I do feel the need to call it deconstructed. Anyway, is there something there? I think there might be something there. I've been working on those, although I went back and re-knitted the whole sock. Because that's the trouble with when I decide I'm going to design, I end up re-knitting everything, like, at least twice.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I think a lot of designers do that.
But yeah, I've been working on those.
All right. And then I've got my sail shawl, which it's been on my What Do I Want to Knit for a long time. And I started it. I started it because I was going to be flying to Omaha. I think we talked about this last time. And I
yes.
wanted something that was fairly simple for the airplane. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up just reading on the airplane the whole time. So it was weird. I didn't really knit.
See, I can't read, so I don't have that. I mean, I can read. I just can't read on a plane.
Okay. I don't know. I picked up a good book and I was enjoying it. So,
cool.
Yeah, so I started mine. We've got a few kits left in the shop if you want to join us. But I think that's your next thing too, right?
Yeah, my other thing was the sail shawl as well, which I just started, but I'm very excited because I'm on color B for the first time, so that's super exciting.
Yeah, it's a nice, easy shawl.
Yeah, it's a lot of gorgeous stitch, and once you got into it, I started it while we were doing trivia, and that did not work well, but once you've started it and you can see what you're doing, pretty easy to do. You don't have to keep referring to the pattern or anything.
Right, just a simple 4-row repeat.
Yeah.
You just have to remember which of the 4 rows you're on.
Yes, that's the only thing.
Right, I also end up with weird increases in places.
Yeah, yes. So I've really been working on 3 things, but you have other stuff?
Yeah. So another thing I'm doing is, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but the local yarn store day is coming up on April 30th, which is next weekend as we're recording this.
2022.
Yes, so we're going to have to edit quickly, I guess. and it is from Casapinka. It's called the Rick Rack shawl.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. But it's 2 colors that work together of any kind. And it's going to be a free pattern if you buy the 2 skeins of fingering weight from a local yarn store that weekend, next weekend.
Nice.
And so I got a preview sample as a local yarn store owner. And I've been playing with it. I'm doing mine out of Madeline Tosh Twist Light. And I'm going to put up, probably on Instagram and Facebook and maybe in our newsletter, a bunch of different samples we came up with of different color combos that I thought would be really pretty.
Yeah, nice.
And we had Nicole in our shop picking combos too, and she's really good with colors.
Like kits, kind of.
Well, not exactly kits. You can still do whatever the heck you want, but I'm going to give you some examples.
Yeah, okay.
So take these 2 colors of Madeline Tosh or these 2 colors of Maiden Yarn sock.
Yep,
so.
Nice.
And then the last thing I'm doing is I'm using the Mermaid's Purse pattern from Wonderland Yarns, and I have modified it a little bit to make it a little bit bigger. It's made out of hemp yarn and recycled silk. So it's very different. It has like no give at all, so my hands have been getting a little sore knitting on it. But I finished it. It went really fast because it was on like size 15 needles.
Oh, that's what that's from.
I don't think so. I've got a little scratch on my hand, but I haven't knit on it in a few days.
Yeah.
No. So anyway, that's almost done. I just need to cut out a lining for it and sew it together because it's all knitted up. And it's just like a really pretty, like, looks like a mermaid's purse, I guess. And
it
I'm
does.
Using a big chunk of sea glass as a button.
Yeah. Oh,
so
nice.
So that's super fun.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So that was what we're working on. I probably worked on some of my actual in progress projects a little bit too, but nothing substantial to speak about. I've had a serious case of startitis. I don't know what it is, but I've just needed to cast on everything.
I've just been buying stuff for new projects. I haven't actually started them.
I know. I've got a bunch more I want. And sitting right next to us here, so this will lead right into Local Yarn Store Day and Shop Talk, which is our next segment. But I am sitting next to a giant box of amazing stuff from Wonderland Yarns. Oh. All their special Local Yarn Store Day exclusive colorways, some kits, some, I don't know, I don't even know all what's in there yet. I just bought the whole package. So I'm super
whole kit
excited
and caboodle.
To dig into that. But so, like I said, Local Yarn Store Day is April 30th of 2022, Saturday. Yep. We have Bristol Ivy teaching two classes for us that day and sticking around for a catered lunch. So
She's
you can
great.
Choose any one of those three things or all three of them to join us for. Mm-hmm. Or you could just come and shop. We're going to have lots of different vendors are giving us free patterns to give away that day. Like Casapinka, the Rick Rack shawl will be free that day. You'll get a code and you'll go home and download it the next day from Ravelry. But yeah, it's just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that'll only be shadowed by 2 weeks later on May 14th, another Saturday, we're going to finally have our grand opening. So
Yay.
We had like a soft opening when we first opened in our new shop.
Yeah.
This is going to be a grand opening.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have at least two of our yarn vendors there doing trunk shows.
Mm-hmm.
Barocco is going to have, they're going to have their new fall yarns. Even though it's spring, now is the time when I'm going to buy our new fall yarns, right?
We think
it's a season or two ahead.
Some people do that. Yeah, they start it now and then they might be ready by the time fall is around.
Yes.
Right?
But the yarns won't come out until the fall.
Yeah, okay.
So these, but what happens now is that she brings in all the samples and I pick what I want to carry in the fall. And I can't carry them all, right?
Yeah.
Even though my new shop is big. Not that big. My bank account isn't that big. But what I'm going to do this time, because it's our grand opening, what I want is, I want to hear from you guys. What do you...
Yeah.
What do
people
like?
Yeah.
So come on in, have a yarn tasting, see which ones you like, vote for your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
There's also going to be lots of giveaways.
Yeah.
We're going to have bags full of stuff to give away to everybody who comes in, or at least the first 20 people, maybe. I don't know. I got to figure out what that number is.
So come in early. What time do you open?
We open at 10, unless you're in Bristol's class. Our morning class starts at 9.
Ooh.
So. If you want to join us for the recursive shawl class at 9, you'll definitely be there as one of the first people to get your bag.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay.
Yes.
So more reason to join the recursive shawl class.
Yes.
Which I was thinking about anyway. Hey, this is Jen just breaking in here for a second to say I was very confused at this point in the discussion. Because I was confusing the Local Yarn Store Day event, which is when Bristol is going to be in the class, and the event on May 14th, which is our grand opening. So the grand opening is going to have the bags for free, and that will be on May 14th. We open that day at 10 a.m. There will be no classes that start early, so... The conversation now continues with all the great reasons to come to the recursive shawl class, which is still valid, but I just want to apologize for the confusion with me getting both those dates mixed up because they are both coming up and my brain is way too full now. Thanks. Hope to see you soon.
And that's going to be a fun class because you get her first part of it is going to be on color theory and how to pick the colors for your shawl.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to take a break. And people can go shop for those, whatever they want to make their shawl out of.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll get a 10% discount because it's class supplies.
Yeah.
And then they'll go back in and learn how to do the shawl, which is kind of a cool... It looks like... I don't know if you've ever done... I don't know if it's chaos theory. I can't remember. But where it... You take the same kind of shape and just repeat it over and over, smaller and smaller.
I know. It's like a cochlear... Like a...
Yeah.
I can picture it
really
for some
great.
Reason.
And so that's going to be, an extra special part of that class. And the best part is, you get to use our new classroom.
Yes.
Which is so cool because it can close the doors and people can shop and not be in the way of the classroom.
And you can still see everything that's going on.
Yeah.
So you're not really separated from all the lovely yarn.
Right. And then we'll be catering a lunch from Portland Pie. Portland Pie doesn't know about this yet. I will let them know soon in case they are listening. But we're going to have vegetarian... friendly options, maybe exclusively. I don't know. We'll see what I decide to buy.
Yeah. Nice.
because, you know, at least Julian in Bristol are vegetarians, and I'm sure several more of you are.
And so Portland Pie is great.
Yes, and it's right around the corner from our shop, where you could normally just go after you shop.
Yeah.
You know, as I often will walk over there.
Yes, you actually only ever move your shop near Portland Pie.
It was Otto's last time.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Which is also delicious.
Which is also good.
I miss their mashed potato, bacon, and scallion pizza tremendously. But Portland Pie has some good other...
Yeah, they do.
My favorite is their steak and blue salad, just have to say.
Yeah.
So that's the grand opening day. What'd I say? We've got vendors. We've got some celebrities who I'm not going to name yet, but will be coming in and...
Besides you and me.
Yeah, well, we'll be there.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll record a special grand opening day segment if anyone wants to join us for that.
Yeah.
Tell us your thoughts on the podcast.
So May 14th, 2022.
Yes. Oh, and then there's going to be grand prize giveaways, too. We're going to have, in addition to the bags you're going to get, you're going to get a lot of raffle tickets. Mm-hmm. And we've got at least three amazing, like, sweater sets, maybe four at this point, including one that's like a cashmere, 100% cashmere ranunculus. We're going to be giving away. We're going to be giving away enough for a linen sweater.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some good prizes. So make sure you're there.
Yeah.
And then, see, we're all about the events now. The last one is the retreat, and it's not the last one. Just the last one I'm going to talk about for today.
Just the last one chronologically in what we're talking about today. Yes. Right.
Unless you want to talk about just every Thursday night from 4 to 6, you can come in and knit with us.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's even before Local Yarn Store Day, there'll be another one of those.
Yeah.
Every Thursday. And we pulled out the game last week. We were knitting game, playing cards and knitting.
Yeah, because you can do both. Yeah, you can knit virtually and in real life.
Oh, and we are offering classes now in general. The Learn to Knit classes are back.
Yeah, on Mondays, right?
Well, 101 starts tomorrow, Monday.
Yeah.
And then we've got a 201 and a 301.
Yeah.
That, you know, take you through the different steps of learning how to knit.
Yeah, very nice.
Those are a series of two classes each.
Yeah.
And they're only $40 for both classes, so it's a deal. So bring your friends who don't know how to knit yet. Or if there's just basic skills you want to brush up on. Finally, the retreat, which we've talked about over and over, but the vendors are really kind of going all out, sending me amazing prizes. Like right behind you now, Julie, there's a giant stack, aside from the mac and cheese on top. But I went to BJ's and got a box of mac and cheese, so it's in a sack.
There's going to be mac and cheese at the retreat. You heard it here first.
No, we're doing better than that. Come on. I've got amazing caterer coming.
Yes.
Anyway, there's a giant pile of stuff there, which I'm not letting Julie look at yet.
No.
Of giveaways. It's all sealed. If you go to the website, I did put pictures of a lot of them out there.
Oh, you did?
The giveaway prizes. So there'll be drawings there, in addition to the amazing swag bag from all these vendors that all the retreat people are going to get. And the three classes from all these amazing teachers who we've been talking to, plus Casa Pinka.
Mm-hmm.
There will be giveaways with some cool like sweater kits and stuff.
Nice.
So everything you're going to want to be there for, so don't miss it. There's only a little bit of time left to sign up for it. I think I'm still accepting through most of May. I'll have to check when that deadline is. But go to knitwitattheshores.com to sign up.
Join us.
Yay. Gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I think that does it, right? We've come to the end of another Main Yarn podcast.
We have. Yeah. As always, the show notes will be at knitwitportland.com and click on the Main Yarn podcast link at the top.
Yeah, thank you, Knitwit, for sponsoring us. And happy knitting, everyone.
Happy knitting. Bye-bye.
Bye.